Folks, Graham Sutherland here, Thursday night, 21st Century Jacobite. I'm an hour late. My computer, my water-cooled computer, died yesterday. I couldn't understand what was going on. It just kept switching itself off, and I couldn't source it out. So I took it to the computer shop, and the guy said, it's my water pump that circulates the water had broken down. I've got a Corsair water cooling system. My computer, well, I used to use it for gaming, and it's got a big quad-core chip in it. It's quite hot. But anyway, the guy in the computer shop said those chips work better with air cooling, and it's much cheaper. So I'm going to go back to air cooling. Just going to go back to air cooling. I get my computer back tomorrow. So if this call sounds strange or, you know, in any way weird, it's because I'm basically doing it on my cell phone and coming to you on a Galaxy S9 Plus. It was difficult logging in. It was weird. Mind you, I've never done it before, so it was all new. It was asking me to log into Uber via my Google accounts for some reason, and I tried all three of my Google accounts and it just wouldn't work. Which was a bit strange. I put in the right details and it was just sort of going into like a hang mode, as if it was trying to log on continuously and nothing was happening. But if I put in the wrong password intentionally, just to see what would happen, it was coming up saying you've entered the wrong password. So it was obviously recognising that I'd put in the right username and password. But it wouldn't let me actually just log on. It was like it was trying and trying and trying. Quite frustrating, really. I've been at it for the best part of an hour, so my back, you know, a little bit, woo. anyway, yeah, so but I get my PC back tomorrow. They're gonna do a couple of upgrades in it as well. I just thought I'd as well kill two birds with one stone and get the thing tweaked a bit. I told him I was intending buying an iMac, and he wasn't too happy with that at all. He went, oh no man, you don't want to get an iMac in your environment. So basically I live in a cabin with a big wood burning stove, and I burn lots of logs over the winter. It's nice. I'm on a riverbank, beautiful. But, stoves create quite a lot of dust. There's a lot of dust in the environment, and computers don't like dust. And he said the iMac was even worse. It was really susceptible to dust. And he also said you need special tools to get the front off, basically, because it's made out of a single piece of alloy. And the tools required are like £100. That's probably about $125, $130 US. Anyway, so, yeah, he's put me off anyway. I was just about ready. I've been putting money aside. I'm just about ready just to buy one. You know, I just like the idea of an all-in-one, so you don't have wires trailing to a separate case. And also, of course, you don't have wires trailing. You don't have wires trailing anywhere because your webcam and your microphone are both built into your screen, as well as the hard drive and Wi-Fi and modem and CPU and RAM and everything. It's all built in behind the monitor. I think it's a great idea. It's a superb concept for keeping things... Well, if space is an issue, and space is a bit of an issue where I live, I don't want stuff on the floor. Happier with the idea of a computer built into my monitor. However, you can get Dell machines that do that, all-in-ones, and also Lenovo's and stuff, basically an all-in-one, and you can open it and service it and upgrade it and stuff yourself, which is rather nice. So he's basically my computer guy. He's really good, by the way. He's brilliant. But he's put me right off the whole idea of getting an Apple. And he gave an example of a hairdresser. He does business with a hairdresser, and he said that the machine only lasted a couple of years. The iMac only lasted a couple of years because it basically started to get full of hair, little hair clippings and dust and stuff. And packed in after a couple of years, and he said, you'd be the same with your, your log dust. So, yeah, probably won't go for an iMac now. I'll spend probably less than half the money in an all-in-one Dell or whatever. Anyway, get back tomorrow, so it's all good. So, I've got a friend in the States. Speaking to him just yesterday, and he was saying basically that things are out of control. The left has become obsessive, totally polarized, in wanting to just bring the country to its knees, or impeach Trump, or cause a revolution, or, you know, just cause mayhem in any way possible. Just cause a societal breakdown, and then blame Trump. After the shit hits the fan, and getting upset, just getting totally obsessed about it, to the extent that we're not even functioning as politicians anymore in the country. They've just they've completely lost track of what they should be doing. They are just so focused on bringing Trump down. It's became a national mental illness. That came from an American friend of mine. Now, he basically told me some other stuff. It's quite disturbing. His wife's brother, that's his brother-in-law, works for a company that supplies food and fruit and stuff like that to wholesale markets, basically. Restaurants, cafes, things like that. And offshore installations and stuff, you know, that kind of thing. So he's a driver for them. He drives a big rig. Now, in the last 2 months, he's been stocking up. Supposedly top secret underground installations. Dried food, rice, oatmeal, bottles of water, lentils, barley, corn, sweet corn, tinned food. Quite a lot of tinned food. Different kinds of tinned food. More than he even realized that you got. So tinned food and also freeze-dried food in packets. You know those freeze-dried kind of ready meals you get, that kind of thing. Pallets and pallets and pallets of them going on. Right now. Right now. To their deep underground shelters. And at the same time, let's not forget, the US has taken up battle positions in the Middle East. The Arabian Sea, they've taken up battle positions. It's not a joke. It's not a drill. Now, basically, they've fallen back. That's what they've done. They've fallen back outside the 450, 500 kilometer radius. Because that's the range of the Iranian missiles. Or just at the edge of their range. So they've basically taken up battle positions by backing off to what they consider a safe distance. Obviously, US missiles have got the ship-mounted missiles have obviously got the ability to fly further than 500 kilometers. So that's a battle position right there. It's not a drill. Now, they were unsuccessful in trying to blame Iran for attacking Saudi Arabia. They've tried and tried to try. They've tried, and they keep repeating the same stuff over and over again. But there's no real solid evidence, and neither has Saudi Arabia been able to prove that Iran was behind it. And the reason they're struggling to do that is because Iran's not behind it, obviously. And they don't want to face the fact that they've got sleeper cells belonging to the Houthi rebels within Saudi Arabia itself. That's what's happening. And that's why missiles were able to come from different directions, namely from the north and the northeast down into Saudi Arabia. And, of course, Yemen's to the west of them. So the missiles would have to come to the west if they're coming from Yemen. But no, they're out far and wide, and they're inside Saudi Arabia. That's what's happening. So, they are desperately trying a false flag on Iran. That's the bottom line. That's what they're trying to do. They're getting Iran, trying to blame Iran for any old shit that happens as a precursor to attacking the country. Now, we've known they're going to attack Iran. We've known that either the US or Israel was going to attack Iran because they've been threatening it for 30 years. They've been threatening to attack Iran, the US and Israel, for 30 years. Let's face it. So what do these parasites know? Why is things happening right now? Why are all those long life foodstuffs going down into the underground bunkers? Why? It's quite obvious. They know something that we don't know. I'm thinking the shit's going to wait to hit the fan. That's what it looks like. That's exactly what it looks like. And they keep trying to distract us. Distract us with this climate activist female. Every time you switch its TV on or the internet on, Irma, whatever her name is, that annoying little autistic kid that keeps repeating all the paedophile establishment cliches about the environment and about the weather, just all the nonsense and lies. I think it's disgusting, absolutely disgusting, how they are using an autistic little girl to sell the taxation scam. It really is shocking. It just shows you how desperate these people are to adopt Nazi-style tactics, getting children to promote deceptive agendas. But that's what they're doing. And every time you switch your TV on, that's all you get on all the mainstream news channels. And just absolute, just white noise. Just white noise about politics. No real substance, no real news, no real facts or, anything like that. Just white noise. Talking in circles. Sorry, did we have someone else trying to join in there? Is that you, Johnny? Sorry, someone...
No one connected on the conference.
All right, I just heard I heard part of a word. Did you hear that?
No. I don't know if it was on here. Maybe you heard it in the background or something. I'm not sure.
No, it was on a call. It sounded like somebody said a word, but half of it was chopped off. Never mind.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I thought it was. I thought Johnny was still on the call. Mind you, you'll probably join us later on. Yeah, I can see the screen now. Sorry, I wasn't looking at the screen previously. I can see what's going on now. But anyway, anyone that's paying attention in the US should be alarmed right now, because they don't stock underground bunkers with fresh provisions without some sort of plan or some sort of agenda, obviously. So something's going on that they're not telling the public about, and mainstream news is busy trying to distract us from basically our aggression towards Iran. We've been really savage towards them. We've been horrible towards Iran, and we've been horrible towards Yemen. And we have imposed sanctions in both of those countries that's caused mass deaths. Now, there's 8 children a week. That's more than one a day, obviously, dying in Yemen every day due to US and EU sanctions, because they can't get insulin. The diabetics can't get insulin. And the other seriously ill people can't get their medication. And they're dying. And old people are dying as well. But when old people die, they generally don't record the death as a statistic, because it's assumed that they're old and they're going to die anyway. And, they're in their 80s or they're in their 90s or whatever. And they die, it's not counted. And that's the assumption. The assumption is, they've lived to be a fair old age. So they are not included. So you could probably double the figure that I just said. If there's 8 kids dying in Yemen every week due to EU and US sanctions, you could safely say there is at least that amount of old people dying as well. So that puts us up about 16 plus a week dying because of our sanctions. Now, if you add to that the fact that we're supplying Yemen with all these missiles and bombs and F-16s and even air support, supplying them with air support and targeting information. If you add that to the brutal sanctions we've imposed on them, That's a. It's disgusting. It's disgusting how we're treating them. I don't want to be. I don't want to be seen as being any part of that. It's shocking. It's absolutely shocking what we're doing there. And these poor people, you wouldn't actually believe your eyes. They are emaciated, you know, all blown up with lack of nourishment and everything, and in some cases, eating leaves and mud and stuff. There's nothing else to eat. It's disgusting what we're doing there. It really is, and no one wants to talk about it. No one really wants to discuss it because it's too unpalatable, it's too horrible. And all the while we've been distracted with this Greta Thunberg, this autistic child working for the paedophile establishment. It's shocking how they do that. And the tragic thing is, she's having results. There's a lot of people convinced it's the truth. You know, it's a true story. And pollution's killing the world and just all this kind of scaremongering that Al Gore came out with in 1996 or whatever. 1997, I think it was. Al Gore said that if we continued burning fossil fuels, basically on our current path, if we continued on our current... He said this back in the 90s, if we continued on our current path, the global ice caps, the polar ice caps, the polar ice caps would increase their melt rate to such an extent that by 2016, sea levels could have risen from 16 to 20 feet. So that was, like I said, that was said in 96. So as a 20-year span, he's saying that things are so critical that if we don't change our course by the year 2016, a large portion of the west coast, the continental United States, will be underwater. Miles of coastal land underwater. Yeah, that's what he said. And shortly after that, he wrote another book called Earth in the Balance. Now, I bought that book. I remember it. I remember when it came out. It was came out about 97, 98. Or maybe later. I can't remember, but I bought it anyway. Maybe around about the millennium, yeah. Anyway, I bought that book, Earth in the Balance, and I wasn't sure, you know, really what it was about. And I assumed it was about the military threat. The threat of nuclear war. That's why I assumed the book was about, and that's why I bought it. And I remember it was quite a thick book, and it was quite an expensive book. I paid about £18 for it. Remember that. And I bought it thinking, you know, I was going to get some insider information about military threats, possible military threats, possible scenarios where World War III would start and what have you. And it was nothing about that in the least. It was nothing about that. I was completely wrong. It was all about the polar ice caps and how... you know, the sea levels around the world were increasing. And loads of stories about pollution. There were stories about pollution and pictures of pollution. And all this stuff about carbon dioxide. It was all scaremongering. Of course it was. It's all scaremongering. You can unite people if you can... brainwash them into fear stuff, into fear something. Fear a common threat. Fear a common enemy. And you can brainwash people into doing just about anything. And that's what they've done. And the fact they've used a child To push forward a taxation scam is disgusting in the extreme. Absolutely disgusting, using that poor brainwashed kid. That mind-controlled child is selling a taxation scam. But that's what they do. That's what they're like. Anything to sell that lie, to set us up, to further exploit us, to set us up to drain more of our capital away from us. Every time you turn on the political channel or whatever, you can hear that they're angling to introduce new taxes, different taxes, stealth taxes, carbon taxes, global warming taxes. I don't know why they don't just come out with it and say, okay, right, we are obsessively greedy. We're insanely greedy, and we're just going to put your sales tax or value-added tax, as it is in the UK, I'm just going to put that up by another 10%. I don't know why they don't just come out and just be honest about what they're doing. But no, they like to make up they seem to get a kick off of making up elaborate deceptions. Very elaborate deceptions. And sell it to us in a deceptive and very emotional way. And everyone's fallen over themselves to jump on the bandwagon, because that's what they do, and they know that's how the human mind works. We are very tribal, and we identify with other groups of people, like the left, have totally embraced all the strangeness and the perversion and the weirdness of the gay lobby and the LGBT lobby and this kind of stuff. They've jumped on that bandwagon. And it's became, sadly, it's become trendy to be that way. Listen to everything the mainstream media tells you, verbatim, as if it was actual truth. They've no idea they've been mind-controlled, and they've been mind-controlled for years. But that's the nature of humanity. That's the nature of the human soul. We love a common enemy. We love something that we can all share a fear in. That's been proven time and time again. Every time there's a war, everyone kind of groups together because there's a common enemy, and everyone, it brings out the best in people, in fact, because everyone's ready to help their neighbour and share the burden and all this kind of stuff. Share the food, share the resources. It brings out the best in people, because people basically want to work in cohesive groups, functioning groups, or be part of something. People like to feel that they're part of something. They're not just an individual, a part of something. And all this scaremongering is basically a mind control. Reminds me of Edward Bernays thing. Bernays was a great one for uniting people with fear and selling concepts, selling ideals to public. It was him who got all the women smoking in the early part of the 20th century, because prior to that, women didn't really smoke, or at least they would never smoke outdoors. There was a few women smoking indoors, but women wouldn't smoke outdoors because it was considered to be a macho thing, not something that a lady would do. But Edward Bernays changed all that with his slick advertising, because they know how the human mind works. And if they could convince females that they were free and classless and sophisticated by smoking cigarettes in public. They would do it. That's what they did, and they sold it. So that same psychology, that same mind control techniques to control the masses are still very, very much in use. They'll keep doing the same thing if it works. And it totally worked. So, yeah, so that's what they're doing now. And we are all preoccupied. You can see it online, the chatter is all about gloomy stuff about the climate, gloomy stuff about, you know, where we're headed as a species because of pollution and CO2. And it's utter nonsense. Having been involved in commercial horticulture, I could tell you for a fact that they use CO2 in canisters, gas bottles, if you like. They use that in commercial fruit production. So they blast the fruit with CO2 when it's getting near fruiting time, or flowering time, I should say. When it's getting near the time to flower, they start giving it CO2, and then when it actually fruits or starts fruiting, they increase the CO2 because plants use CO2 in order to photosynthesize. And that's what they do. That's how plants work. So the more CO2 they've got, the better they synthesize, photosynthesize. So that's what they're about. Filling our heads with utter nonsense that CO2, carbon, and going on about tons of carbon as if, you know, as if tons of carbon was somehow scary. Carbon dioxide, it's just utter nonsense. It's just hysteria. It's hysterical nonsense based on deception. Which is based on more hysterical nonsense. So you either buy it or you reject it. And I'll tell you something, there's a lot of credible thinking minds, there's a lot of credible scientists as well, have rejected it out of hand for the scam that it is. It's not science, it's anti-science. Now, no one with a functioning brain is going to argue that the climate's not changing and hasn't changed for, well, natural cycles. These natural cycles have been on the go for years. It's how the world goes around. It's how the world works. These are all natural cycles. But they're trying to tell us it's because of mankind's endeavors that this looming catastrophe, this horrendous looming catastrophe and this flooding and everything that's going to happen is somehow due to mankind. It's so arrogant when you think about it. When you look at the colossal distances and just the sheer vastness of space, you realize that mankind is so unbelievably futile, you know, just insignificant, completely insignificant in comparison to the vastness and size and space and sheer volume of matter. We're not even a speck of dust on a football. We are so insignificant. And 7 billion is such an infinitely small number, you know, of people. But you can sell an idea quite easily. If you show lots of pictures of smoky chimneys and, you know, one or two pictures of, like, loads of trash floating in water, that moves people emotionally. It changes them inside emotionally. Because they get quite horrified at the images they're seeing And then you can slip anything into their subconscious. You can basically, because they know that you've moved emotionally, they know that they can sell deception into your soul quite easy, because it opens your soul, and then all they need to do is just plant the deception. There's a name for that. There's a name for that particular type of mind control. You know, moving people to a vacant, open position emotionally. It's usually trauma-based. There's a slight trauma involved. And then they slip some other stuff in. The real agenda, then that's pushed in. The real deception, that's when that's pushed in. When they know they've got you in a emotionally vulnerable position, they can sell anything to you. And that's what they do. And that's what you can see online right now. All around the world, with these millions of brainwashed snowflakes telling each other how bad things are environmentally, and also that we're overpopulated and that something has to be done to cull the masses. What a load of absolute garbage. You know, you could put the 7 million or 7.2 million or whatever it is, you could put the world's population into the country of Wales, shoulder to shoulder. Or California, if you want something a little bit closer to home. Or in fact, everyone, 7 point whatever billion, could all have a cabin with a winter store and 2 or 3 acres of land in Alaska, the whole world. Alaska is big enough to sustain that. So you could have your own house, your own little small holding, 2 or 3 acres of land in Alaska. Every single, not just to every family, every man, woman, and child. Now, you've kind of got to divide by 5, haven't you, to get the number of families out of 7 million, because none of us are individuals. We're all members of families. And it's generally 5, 6, 7 people in a family. So you could divide that 7 billion, you could divide that down to, you would only really need maybe 1.5 billion family homesteads, cabins, farms, whatever you want to call them. That's all you would need, because no one lives alone, but there is that space to accommodate every man, woman, and child in their own house, not with a family, their own house with 2 or 3 acres. So you just imagine how much land they could have if people were living in their family groups or extended family groups. Some places in the world, even indeed, some places in Europe, like Switzerland and Austria and stuff, and rural Germany, they have big extended houses on big detached wooden houses on the hills, you know, on the mountainsides or whatever. The mountains are not that big by Scottish standards, but, well, no, they are. No, that's not fair. No, some of them are quite big. But anyway, I digress. My point is, they have their extended family living in their homes, so they've got a lower level to the house. And these are big houses, way bigger than your average American house. And on the lower level is where the animals are kept. That's where the cows and the sheep come in the wintertime to shelter. And, of course, the people live up above. So you've got the first-generation family. You know, you've got the husband and wife and 3 or 4 kids on the first floor. And then up above that, you've got another family. You've got the grandparents and the uncles and aunts or whatever living in the floor above that. And they've both got adequate space. These are big houses. They've got They've got a bathroom in each floor. They don't need to share a bathroom or anything. Like I say, you get the animals down below. So maybe 15 or 20 people all living in one house, an extended family, and that's quite common. Now, they do that in rural Scandinavia as well. That's a common theme throughout the world. They do it in some African countries as well. They basically build a big enough camp in Africa, or a big enough, you know, wigwam or whatever. And they build a big enough place. And India, they do it in India as well. They build a big enough house, or they all squash in together. A whole extended family. Maybe 30 people. Maybe 30 people all living in the same building. And of course, that's what they were doing here hundreds of years ago. The clans would all occupy a single dwelling, a castle, or a stately home or whatever. But you'd get a whole clan living there, or you get a whole clan, maybe, living in one area, you know, one glen or whatever. So, basically, my point is, if you were giving humanity the 7 billion of humanity, if you're breaking them, joining them up back into the family groups and giving everyone a house capable of taking, 14 people, you'd only need 500 million homes. That's all you need, 500 million homes. If groups of 14 or so people, on average, like, doesn't have to be 14, it's not a magic number. I was just using 14 because 14 is just 7 billion times 2. So you could basically take the 7, boil the 7 billion down into half of 1 billion using that arithmetic. And that's kind of where we'd be at, because people would be quite happy to live like that. So anyway, I digress a little bit. I'm actually, the point I'm making is that there is more than enough space by miles, by thousands and thousands of, by tens of thousands of miles, there's more than enough space to sustain massively bigger populations than we've got now. So the elite's obsession with overpopulation is complete deception and purely satanic. It's completely satanic, because the unspoken thing is, if you're overpopulated, you need to cull the herd. You need to thin out the herd. That's the unspoken agenda here. As soon as you start making this broad statement that the world is overpopulated, it's basically a subtle way of saying we need to get rid of some people. Now, who decides what people should be getting rid of? Now, we've already seen that. We've seen it in the UK. They changed the benefit laws in here over the last 5 years. Social Security, state benefits, they changed everything. And they basically changed a complicated benefit system with a lot of different aspects to it. They basically changed it to a much more simplified system called universal credit, where it's just like one benefit suits all or fits all. But the upshot of it was, in the meantime, thousands and thousands of people who had previously been on the sick, as they say, a claimant sickness benefit, thousands and thousands of them were reassessed, and given like a quarter of the money they had previously, or sometimes the money was stopped altogether, and they got suicidal. Couldn't take it. Committed suicide. Thousands of them did. And other ones were basically taken off their benefits altogether and taken off their medications, and they died because of that. So we lost thousands of people, and they stopped publishing the numbers. Long before they got completely out of control, they stopped publishing the numbers of the amount of deaths that were, or suicide, deaths and suicides that were directly attributed to the change in the benefit system. Now, like I say, they implemented this, they introduced it about 5-6 years ago. But now, you've got a situation where the people are actually getting less, they're expected to live on less money, much less money than they were getting 5 or 6 years ago. So a lot of people jumped off of bridges or stuck their exhaust pipe into the car or drove their car off a cliff and all this kind of stuff. Horrendous stuff happened because people weren't coping with the harshness and brutality of the new benefit system. And that, they knew that was going to happen. They knew exactly what was going to happen. They knew what the upshot of their policies would be. But they also know that they will save billions. They know if they can get rid of thousands of people that they will be saving billions. And that's what they're about. It's about greed. That's what it's about, greed. There's no interest in it. Any ideas you've got about the brotherhood of man and all this stuff, it's false. It's completely false. And the police are not there to protect themselves. The police are there to exploit and abuse. And the courts are there to exploit and abuse. And all these petty laws. We've got all these petty laws and these victimless crimes. Writing out tickets all the time for people. Being pumped for millions. It's like another tax. It's disgusting. It's disgusting the way it's went in America. And it's just as disgusting here in the UK, because we're going the same way. We are going the same way. And Britain's famous. Britain's famous all over the world for having a fantastic National Health Service. A free National Health Service. Well, they're chipping away at that as well. They're chipping away at it. We're famous for other things as well. We're famous for the fact that the police aren't armed. We don't have armed police. At least that's the public's perception. But the truth is, there's more and more police armed. Just land at any airport, any international airport, even like Glasgow or Manchester or whatever. You don't need to go to London. Any of the bigger airports, Luton Airport, whatever, Leeds, all these airports have got armed police with submachine guns and stuff. And there's more and more police carrying weapons here. More and more. And at the same time, Joe Public has been told that he can't even have an air rifle without a license. You need a license for air rifles now if you're going to use one. I know plenty of people that thought, screw your licenses. My one will just stay under the bed. And I'm one of those people, you know. I mean, I've had air weapons and used them for Oh, just fun, really. A bit of target practice and stuff. I'm talking about proper air weapons, like German-made rifles was my preference. I like the Wehrach, a powerful gun, heavy gun, but powerful. So you could take out small game with them, no problem at all. And I've had one pretty much continuously since I was 12 years old. And that was one of the first things, you know, in my childhood, that was one of the first ways that you could prove to your father, prove to your old man, that you were mature enough to, or, you know, you were old enough to be trusted, you were mature enough to be trusted with a weapon that could kill someone. Because make no mistake, you shoot someone in the head with one of them and you're killing them. They're not toys. They're certainly not toys. And we used to go hunting for rabbits mainly. Great fun when you're a teenager. Anyway, they've decided, because of a few idiots in inner cities, they decided that they were going to make everyone have to license them. Totally nuts. And at the same time, more and more police have been armed. Now, the same thing's happening in America to some extent, isn't it? They're trying to push to take guns off the people and at the same time giving the police more powers. I couldn't believe it, you know. I was reading stuff online. It's like 3,500 to 4,000 people in US jails for life for really, really minor things. Ridiculously minor things. And doing life imprisonment.
That's quite a...
One was a... Sorry?
That's quite a ridiculous situation. What was the one you were going to mention?
I was going to mention that guy that got life in jail for stealing a black and white TV like 28 to 30 years ago or something.
Wow. And a lot of petty drug offenses, you know, even cannabis. With all the changing laws,
yes.
And they still have these people riding away. I hate to interrupt. You had a good topic you were getting into here, but it's the top of the hour, so I thought you'd maybe close out and we'd shift over to the roundtable.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I'll do that, Richard. I just noticed it's the top of the hour. Okay. Well, listen, folks, that was a sharp and sweet show tonight. I'll be back to normal next week. I'm getting my computer back tomorrow, so we'll be back. I'll say good night and God bless. You can join us, remember, on the round table, which is back-to-back with this show, and you're more than welcome to. So if you've been listening, stick around. Go into the round table. It's more casual. It's more informal. It's less of a less of a presentation and more of a participation. So, yeah, I'm going to say good night and God bless, and I look forward to seeing you over on the round table. So it's 21st Century Jacobite, Graham Sutherland, signing out for tonight. So good night and God bless.
Tune the down.